the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
This is the podcast for broadcast. Sound off podcast with Matt Kendall.
This week I speak with Julie Adam, senior VP at Rogers Radio. It doesn't take long to realize that Julie is passionate about radio. From board op to on-air, music director, program director at KISS 92.5, and also the venerable CHFI in Toronto. Now, our paths have never really crossed beyond a few emails and a hello at Canadian Music Week. And when it comes to people asking for guests, this is the one people have asked for the most. Julie Adam joins me from Rogers Radio headquarters in Toronto, where the Numeris Diary ratings are 2 hours old.
Every day is an adventure, so whether I do it today or tomorrow or yesterday, every day is a new adventure.
Good.
We had a good ratings book today, so I guess I'll be a little happier.
Yeah, it's always nice. You can breathe easier on moments like that.
Yeah, I just, you know, you feel for your team so much. I mean, obviously I'm not a program director anymore, but that the last several years of, you know, when I was programming, I was in a PPM market. So, you know, the ratings were coming out regularly, which is a blessing and a curse. It's a curse because, you know, you're seeing them all the time and you're constantly wondering what they mean, and they probably mean nothing. But that's the curse of it. And then I guess, you know, the blessing is you don't have to wake up sort of twice a year or three times a year after a sleepless night and try to guess what's going to happen to your radio station and have absolutely no idea whether it's going to be great numbers or terrible numbers or so-so. And so I really feel the stress for our programmers around ratings, that my gut aches on ratings days in the diary markets, and I certainly feel for our PPM programmers when they're looking at weekly numbers that aren't going their way. It's painful, that's for sure.
Did you sleep well last night?
I sleep well every night. I'm a great sleeper. I love to sleep. I have no problem falling asleep, and I have no problem staying asleep. I had a great sleep last night.
So I'll just remove the question, what keeps you up at night, and just assume that it's nothing.
Yeah, actually, it's true. I mean, to the literal point of it is nothing really. I fall asleep really easily, and I wake up really easily, and I love sleeping in hotels, and I have absolutely no problem sleeping. You know, what worries me, it's really the people. That's the part for me that is the hardest part, is I worry constantly about the people. You know, the business and the future of radio and what radio is now and what it used to be and what it's going to be. I mean, yes, those are all things that, you know, as a business person, to me, that's the fun part. You know, hey, what are we going to do? I love that part. You know, it's challenging, and at sometimes you feel like you're dangling from a high rise and you're not exactly sure where you should be going. But for me, the people is the worry. Like, just the, are they happy? Why aren't they happy? You know, I'm not there enough. Should I be doing more? What do they need? I can't give them everything they want. We can't invest in all the places that they want us to invest in. And so that's the part for me that is, you know, I guess if something was going to keep me up at night, it would be that.
So you kind of play the role of a therapist in order to gauge, you know, people's psychological pulse often. I mean, you have to be good at that to do what you do.
Yeah, listen, I think you have to. I mean, the people are the most important part. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I mean, there's the saying, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And, you know, I absolutely believe that. And I, you know, I think early in my career, you know, I got into radio for the, you know, the product. I mean, I was a music fanatic. So I really got into radio because I loved music. But, you know, I learned quickly that it was really about the people. And I really started to gravitate towards the on-air talent. And And then, found that my, my biggest joy is actually working with people and watching them succeed. I mean, that's the big, when our stations do well, whether it's, from a revenue point of view or it's a ratings point of view or it's just doing a great initiative and seeing the success and watching our people get praise, that to me is, that's the part that I truly love. And I think you have to, I truly believe that the people are the difference makers. And as I've become more experienced and had more experience, you can start to articulate and start to understand what it means to say culture eats strategy for breakfast. And I really believe that, we all have access in business to most of the same tools or many of the same tools. So it's really going to be the people that'll be the difference makers. You got to have empathy and really understand where they're coming from.
Did you ever engage in any criminal activity such as taping music off the radio onto cassette?
Yes.
And what did
Guilty as charged.
What did you tape?
Well, I was the mixtape. I made mixtapes like that was my life as a kid. I was always making mixtapes and I spent all of my allowance on vinyl. I'm 47, so, I spent every Saturday, I grew up in Toronto, so I spent every Saturday going downtown to Sam the Record Man and then HMV and, spent all my money on vinyl and made millions and millions of mixtapes. I actually wasn't, I loved radio for the music and I guess I would maybe... I always felt like it was cheating. Like I had to own the vinyl and I had to own the song and I had to put it on my mixtape in a pure way. But every once in a while I would cheat. And it was I grew up listening mostly to rock, to Q107 and CFNY. But every once in a while I would, I'd go to CFTR for Top 40 and, I'd get sucked into one of those really great Top 40 hits and that'd be the kind of song that I would tape off the radio because I knew that there wasn't going to be a, an album that I was going to want to buy out of it.
Okay, time for a little fact checking. Back in 1992, I went to school with one of Julie's closest friends, Lexi Badawi. Now, I didn't know the two of them were friends until recently when it sort of spilled out over Twitter. I went, oh my God, you two are like friends. But armed with that knowledge, I decided to call Lexi up and run a background check on that story.
Julie always had a passion for music. She made the best mixtapes. We went to concerts together. She always had her finger on the pulse of the music scene in Toronto, for sure. So we used to see everything. We used to go to the $5 concert series at Wonderland. We saw U2. We saw Simple Minds. We saw every 80s band that ever came through Toronto, which was everybody. We went to a lot of concerts.
Did you think she would wind up in radio?
No, I wasn't sure what she was going to do. I think when she chose radio and television at Ryerson, I didn't know that was the path she was going to take. But she definitely always had a passion for music.
What's one thing that you know about Julie that you can still share with us that the rest of us just don't know?
Wink? She used to drink Wink. I don't even know if they make it anymore. She used to drink Wink all the time.
Wink has real grapefruit, oranges, limes. Wink's fruit flavor is real everything. Imitation, nothing.
Let's have a party.
Wink really has a feel, cause the fresh fruit flavor of Wink is real.
That commercial's from 1969. Maybe that's why Wink eventually disappeared. Killed by the cola wars in the 1980s. Anyhow, let's try to fast forward this thing back to 1993.
Joe has had his moments. Two balls and two strikes on him. Here's the pitch on the way. A swing and a belt. Left field. Way back. Blue Jays win it. The Blue Jays are World Series champions as Joe Carter hits a three-run home run in the ninth inning, and the Blue Jays have repeated as World Series champions. Touch them all, Joe. You'll never hit a bigger home run in your life.
So where were you in 1993 when Joe Carter hits that home run?
That's a funny story. I was on the air at Z99 in Regina. I've lived in Toronto my entire life, except for 2 years. And they were the 2 years that the Jays won the World Series. And I think I was on the air for both of the games. I remember the city exploding and thinking, wow, this is like, you know, this is big right across the country. I mean, people in Saskatchewan were, you know, as every bit as interested in it as people in Toronto. So that's what I was doing that night.
The first time I saw you, it was 2003, Broadcast Awards in Toronto, and you're on stage, you're carrying two things. Actually, you're carrying multiple things, multiple awards, and as well, I think, one of your children at the time. And I turned to Blair Bartram and I said, I think she's working harder than us.
That's funny. I don't remember. What was I doing in 2003? I'm not great with, I have a very short-term memory and I'm really bad with dates, so I'd have to think about for that for a second as to what I was even doing in 2003.
Your programming career, the programming aspect, I mean, at the beginning you said, I'm not really a programmer, but there's still programmer in you.
Oh, 100%. They just don't let me do it anymore. And that's hard. You know, it's been my biggest learning is, you know, in my position, there's very little doing anymore. And it's hard. It takes, because I love to work. I love to roll up my sleeves. I'm happy to hang a banner. I love to go into a control room and all of that. But you know, it's not fair to anyone if I'm in their face. And you have to recognize that your business card carries, even if you don't want it to, your business card carries weight, that even if you don't want it to carry that weight. So, you know, I learned that for me to fire off an email to a programmer and say, hey, what do you think about this? Often it led to action, when really I'm just like, no, I'm just the board op that I was in, you know, 1990, whatever. And I just want to know if you think it's a good idea. And maybe it's a terrible idea, because I have a lot of terrible ideas. I had to really get comfortable in my own skin in this role. And it took a while. I don't think I did a great job, particularly in the first year. I think I, you know, kind of stubbed my toe in a lot of areas. And I was not great as a coach for some of my teammates. I don't think I did a great job of managing a few of my direct reports. And there was some clunkiness there. So, you know, I love to program and I will happily step in at any time someone says we need a programmer. And I think I can continue to provide value in terms of, I love to listen to radio and I listen to as much radio as I, if not more. And I do provide, you know, input and, you know, what I hope is constructive thinking and strategy. But, you know, it's not fair for me to sort of say, hey, I'm going to help you program this station. And there are people programming that know what they're doing. They really don't need me.
So what can you offer for advice when you make a mistake? Because in the interview you did with Sharon Taylor, you talked a lot about the clunkiness that involved letting go of Aaron Davis. And you admitted to making mistakes, but then you also, when you do make a mistake, how do you handle it? Because I make mistakes and sometimes, you know, we want to go to a bad place. And over the years, I had to learn to, you know, to handle my mistakes in a better way. So how do you handle mistakes?
Well, listen, if you're not making mistakes, then you're not trying hard enough. And if you're not trying hard enough, you're not pushing the business forward. I think, you know, it also depends on what the mistake is. You know, oh man, I just missed that. And I'm sorry, I missed the email kind of mistake. I went for it. I put everything I had into it and it was the wrong decision mistake, which is where I would put the Aaron Davis piece. Then there's the, I made this call and it just didn't go the right way. And I mean, I think in every case you have to own it. And the most important thing for me is learning from it, because I've learned more from the mistakes that I've made than I have from the good decisions. Because the mistakes really, you know, you tend to, when you make the right decision, you have a win, you go, great, that was terrific, and off you go. Whereas I think the mistakes really eat at you. They knock you down. They may give you that sort of punch in the gut. And they're noticed, you know, people notice your mistakes generally more than often they notice the good decisions, because the good decisions, you know, they could have come from anywhere. So I think you have to own them. I'm not too fussed by it. Like, I don't mean to sound flippant when I say this, but the reality is it's out of my control what Rogers wants to do with me, right? So I'm in this role. I am going to do everything that I can to do a good job in this role, to take care of the people, to do what I think are the right things. If Rogers decides that I'm not the right person for the role, then they need to make that decision and move on. And I give them full ownership of that decision. That is not in my control. I can't control that. So I don't stress so much and have never worried about this is going to cost me my job. Because one, I can always get another job. Like, worst case scenario, I will go back, you know, and I don't mean it this way, but I will happily go back to pick any job I've done in the past. Board op, music director, program director. I'll live in another city. I love what I do. I'll go work somewhere else. So for me, I'm not worried that mistakes are going to lead me to lose my job. And secondarily, I think we can learn a lot from mistakes. So I have learned a lot, and I own that. And I hope other people realize how much good can come from sort of screwing things up, owning up to it, and moving on with it.
You have a lot of programmers and people who will come to you and say, you know, I get a lot of hot air about radio being in decline, or it's not what it once was, and whatnot. But radio is really as strong as ever. And I think, you know, the radio psyche in 2014 wasn't so good. And now we're in 2018 and it's much, much better. But what do you tell your team, you know, in other cities when they say, you know, I hear radio's in decline?
I mean, first of all, I think you have to start by telling people what's going on all the time. So I would hope to never walk into a market where I'm surprised by a question about how the business is doing, because it's my job to communicate constantly as to how the business is doing. Here's how radio's doing. Here's how Rogers is doing. And here's how your market is doing. And here's how your stations are doing up against your market. So there, I don't think there should be any surprise questions from my team. Listen, I think content is as important now as ever. In fact, I have a couple of kids and I watch them consume content, and there's always something they are consuming, and they have the technology now to be consuming something all the time. So they've always got earbuds in their ears. Sometimes they're listening, sometimes they're watching, sometimes they're playing a game. And they're gravitating towards things that they are interested in. And that's what's important here. I mean, we've got to stay real about the fact that our products have to be great and they have to keep people interested. And if we decline, it's because we're not doing a good job of offering up products that people want, and we're not doing a good job of figuring out how to distribute them. Listen, I don't mean radio's not growing by leaps and bounds, and I think that that's a change. There was a long time there where there was double-digit growth every year. It's a mature business. I think we all have to say it's an amazing business, and we bring in a ton of revenue and profit, but it's a mature business right at this minute. It's steady and stable. And we have to find new ways to grow it that we haven't thought of yet. And I'm confident that's going to happen. I don't think anyone has the magic answer, but I'm confident that's going to happen.
And you're talking about the gadgets, and one of the things you took a leadership role in was Radio Player Canada. Tell me, do you use it? Do you love it? And how much do you love it? And how great is it?
Yeah, well, listen, that's a big group of people that took a leadership role there. I mean, you know, leaders from all of the companies jumped in on that. And I actually, it's funny, I think Rogers was a bit slow. And when I say Rogers, I say me. You know, we always struggle with this, like, what are we going to do on our own and what are we going to do as an industry? That was another thing that I had to really learn. Like, you know, as you come up in the business, all you're worried about is yourself, right? And by yourself, I mean your team or your station. And you just fight tooth and nail against everyone. I mean, that's it. I just woke up every day as a programmer thinking, how do I just beat everybody? Because, I mean, that's what you're paying me to do. And you know, in this role that I'm in now, and we talk about this a lot across all of the companies, is that we really have to be, yes, we're in competition with each other, but we also have to be great partners because we have to push the industry forward. So it took me a while to totally figure out what all of that meant in this role. So I think there were a lot of people in leadership positions that got Radio Player going. I do love it. I mean, I'm biased because I love radio. It's actually all I listen to now because it allows me to, I'm a runner and I listen to radio when I run. And I made the leap and bought the Apple AirPods, which I just love. And I can double tap on my right ear and change radio stations. And I program in the Rogers stations into my favorites. And I just go from one to another, depending on what I'm focused on. So, you know, this morning I'm going to Kitchener tomorrow. So this morning it was all about flipping between our Kitchener stations. And I think it's a great product. And I love the fact that, you know, I have all of these stations in my phone and I don't have to worry about, you know, a boom box or a radio receiver or whatever. They're just right there in your phone. And I always have my phone with me. So, yeah, I'm a big fan and I think it's a great product.
How long do you run for again? I'm just going to do some math.
I run about, I don't know, just over 40 minutes. Monday to Friday. I take the weekends off.
Okay, so is that two or three stations you're going to get in? I just wonder if you're going to get to my station today.
You know? Yeah.
If I'm a programmer, I'm wondering if you're going to get to my station today.
I get through quite a few. It depends on whether I'm doing a deep listen or a quick scan. But, you know, yeah, I usually get to... So this morning I would have listened to... What was on? What did I hear this morning? I heard Country 106.7 in Kitchener. I listened to Chime in Kitchener, and I listened to Kiss 92.5. I heard some of Roz and Mocha. That was on my morning playlist this morning.
I want to talk a little bit about the diary system because it came out today, but it didn't come out in places like Kingston or Kamloops and Kelowna and St. John because they're just not reaching enough people. And we've been with the diary system now for many, many years. And I think you touched on this at Canadian Music Week in one of your talks, and that's, I think we have to look at this and reevaluate where it's going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I always look at it, okay, if we were starting from scratch today, is this how we would handle measurement? And probably not exactly like this. You know, the challenge is through recruitment and how we get these people to make the commitment to, you know, to fill these diaries out. Moving to online has been a great move. I mean, obviously, I think that's a no-brainer there. You know, I don't think eliminating diary markets in the short term is a big deal. In fact, I would say in a lot of unrated markets, probably driving better revenue and better cost per point or cost per commercial without the rating system because they're smaller markets and they're hyper local. And, you know, it's not about the numbers. It's about return on investment. And those clients are seeing a return on investment for the advertising they're doing. So, you know, in some ways, not having ratings really does make it easier. But in a world where, you know, there's more measurement for advertisers, and we buy a lot of advertising for our stations, and we like the fact that we can track measurement through digital. We can see exactly how many, you know, clicks to a website or whatever we got from a Facebook buy. We like that. And I think our clients are no different. So, you know, to long term, to be thinking that we're going to have less measurement for our customers versus more doesn't make sense to me. So I think we have to figure that out. I know the Numeris board is working hard on this. And I feel like, you know, moving to an online diary and then suppressing a few markets for this year, there's action there, which I think is great. And I'm confident that the team is going to work hard to come up with some kind of a solution. We do research in many of these markets and we have no problem getting people to do research. So I think the sample, you know, and it's different. It's a one-time thing and it's 15 minutes instead of having to keep track for 8 weeks. So obviously the commitment is different. But I do think they'll come up with a solution that will allow us to ensure we get the measurement we need for our customers. And as digital listening grows, the data that we get from our digital products and our digital streams obviously makes things a lot easier.
And as you were talking and saying that at Canadian Music Week, I was like, okay, and I was kind of willing you on to say the next thing that I wanted to say. I was like, come on, Julie, you're almost there. Come on, say it. And it has to do with PPM and headphone listening, which is kind of listening that's being left on the table because people are listening in headphones. And if they're listening to a radio station, the PPM's not necessarily picking it up.
Absolutely. I mean, that is a major issue. You know, I just talked about the Apple AirPods. So, I mean, I'm obviously not a regular listener, but, you know, my listening to Kiss 92.5, a PPM market today, would not be recorded because I've got wireless headphones on. And, that is a challenge. Listen, there are some hurdles in front of us. I obviously don't have the solution, but we need to figure that out. No question. There's no question we need to figure that out.
Yeah, I heard there was a solution that involved adding a piece of something to the device we're listening. But listen, nobody can find the charger at any particular time for anything. So adding one more piece to a device is no.
I guess that there's the question really comes back to, I mean, statistically, you only need a certain number of people to represent a large group, right? I mean, that is basic statistics. The questions I would be asking is, does it matter that it's not recording wireless headphone tuning as long as we have representation within the same demographic through conventional listening or through, you know, headphone jack listening that is? So I think they have to answer those questions. I mean, I guess it comes down to, you know, if everybody was doing all of their radio listening with wireless headphones, well, then we'd be in real trouble. But statistically, you know, it is surprising I do want to say that I've been in this business long enough. I've seen diary across in all the major markets. We do a lot of research. So I've seen a gazillion research studies from small markets to big markets. I've seen PPM. And with few exceptions, and I'm talking about trends, you know, big sample, adults 25-54, adults 18-49. You know, if you're looking at a big sample and a long trend, the research that I see generally does line up with the ratings that come out. It's the wobbles, which you get in research as well. You know, you just get a wobble where one station looks better than, you know, if you're doing two studies a year, you might get a wobble in there. It's the wobbles that are hard to handle.
Wobbles in my world. It's Friday.
That's a whole different wobble.
Yeah. In May at Canadian Music Week, Julie Adam appeared on a panel entitled "The Future is Female, Leading Women Tackle Me Too, Time's Up, and Equality in the Workplace." One of the things that Julie said resonated with Z95's Ruby Carr. Now, Ruby is the winner of the Alan Waters Young Broadcaster of the Year Award in memory of Steve Young. And here's what resonated with her.
She was, I liked what she said, because she talked about how someone had asked in the crowd, they said, what are we going to do to make radio a safer place for women? And she said, we got to get the jerks out. And she's right. I like that so much. You know, when you're on the panels, you don't want to say the wrong thing. So you're kind of like trying to censor yourself as you go. And you could see that she was trying to get that point across, but didn't want to, you know, say the wrong thing. But she hit it right on the head. It's as simple as that. Like, you find out who they are and then you get them out.
Ruby's going to be a guest on this podcast next week. I mean, why else do I have that audio? But for now, I've got Julie Adam on a FaceTime connection and want some feedback about the podcast panel I moderated at Canadian Music Week. She's going to tell us how she sees the platform fitting into radio strategies. And then Julie turns the tables and starts asking me some questions.
25 catalogs, over 2,000 albums, 61,000 songs, 197,000 tracks. Megatrax has everything you need to create the perfect sounds for your station, podcast, or digital program. Our flagship catalog, Megatrax, has hundreds of albums covering a huge array of genres and styles. Deep East Music and No Sheet Music deliver international sounds straight out of London. Sensacion brings an authentic Latin flair to every album and is recorded live by local musicians. Megatrax also has a huge collection of FFX, sound design, and narration mixes to give you full creative freedom to make any type of production imaginable. Head on over to megatrax.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's megatrax.com.
The Sound Off podcast is powered by Core Image Studio, your brand sound. Get it in the now. CoreImageStudio.com.
I moderated a podcast panel at Canadian Music Week. By the way, thank you very much for attending. Did you have any takeaways?
Well, first of all, and thank you for reminding me, because I was thinking about this yesterday. I thought you did an awesome job. That's one of the best panels I've seen, period. You did a great job as a moderator and clearly did your homework and a lot of prep. And I thought the panel was terrific. So kudos to you and thanks for doing it. And really, it was, I've been, you know, going to ask people around here. I've talked to a lot of people about how good I thought it was. And I took a lot of notes from it. I mean, my key take, I'm excited about podcasting. You know, to me, it's just putting on a great show and distributing it in a different way. And I love the opportunity there. I think there's, this is, you know, one of those shiny new objects, and it's not new and it's not particularly, you know, it's shiny right now, but it's not new. But I do think, you know, because this is about creating great content with great talent and interesting topics, this to me is something that is only going to grow in my view. And I think it's a great, exciting space. So, yeah, I mean, the takeaway, there were quite a few takeaways. I loved the talk, and it was Fred that was talking about how, you know, he used podcasting as a way, and I've actually used that advice for someone this week. You know, he used it as a way to hone his interviewing skills. It was something that in his broadcast, you know, on his radio show, he wasn't really happy with himself. So, you know, he started doing more interviews in podcasts to kind of hone the craft. So it's almost two birds with one stone. I mean, I thought there was a lot of great stuff there. I was really, really happy I attended.
And Rogers has a whole bunch of podcasts that are really under the umbrella. You've got some of the ones from radio. You've got Dave Wheeler's podcast and Sean Tompkins with The Roots of Rock. And then there's Sportsnet. And to talk about sports and podcasts, you've got a lot of high-profile sports people doing podcasts. So, I mean, you've got to figure that you're sitting on some sort of oil strike.
Yeah, we're really excited about it, Matt. We've got a few in the pipe as well that we're going to release I'm really excited. I think they're going to be, you know, they're going to be new initiatives that don't live on the radio. So I'm excited about that because I think it's going to be, it's a great, you know, experiment makes it seem like we're just winging it, but it'll be a great initiative for us. Our team is really excited about podcasting, and I'm lucky to be in the Rogers Media tent and family where we have a lot of great storytellers and content creators in radio, but also outside of radio. When you think about, you know, the writers that we have on staff for our publications. So, and certainly the Sportsnet is the sort of perfect storm of, you know, having amazing national talent in a massive bullhorn and the ability to promote this great talent across all these platforms. It's been terrific to watch that. Scott Moore has been, you know, really instrumental in getting that podcast strategy going for Sportsnet. So yeah, we're excited. This is an area we are feeling very excited about and quite bullish on. We're making no money, but it's early.
Yeah, but who is, though, really, when it comes to, you know, and this came up at one point that radio is a $17 billion operation and podcast is $220 million. And it's going to take time. And, you know, I as a moderator, I don't get to say this on the panel because I got to let the panelists do that stuff. But if I had a chance to pipe up, podcasting's hard. And when you run a radio station and program it, you're actually doing everybody a favor by putting in commercials and clocks and traffic and weather together and everything else. And, you know, no disrespect to the midday show, but, you know, you only have a few minutes to fill. And inversely, what I tell podcasters is that morning radio is the hardest thing in all of entertainment. To come up with 4 hours of live whatever every morning, good luck. So yeah. There's differences between, you know, between all that. But I think the lesson is podcasting is very difficult. It's very.
Yeah, that you are so right about that. And that's what we're finding is it's really hard. And we've been doing some behind the scenes demos and, you know, scrapping things as we go along. And it is really hard. And, you know, it's kind of like my 12-year-old, you know, I don't know if it was last Christmas or the Christmas before, he wanted a microphone because he wanted to get into podcasting. And he did his first podcast. And it was, you know, I love my son to death, but it was awful. I mean, it's a 10-year-old kid. He wanted to do it on baseball, and he just talked for an hour and 10 minutes. And so you think, you know, there is that point of entry where everyone can do it, including my 10-year-old son. But really, the reality is, like anything in entertainment or broadcasting, sure, anyone could do it. I used to be on the air, but it doesn't mean I was any good at it, and I wasn't any good at it. So it is very hard. It's a lot of work. And who's to really know at this point, you know, which ones are going to work and which ones aren't going to work? I'm sure there are lots that are going to be great that get thrown out that just, you know, don't get picked up, and they don't have the pickup, and there will be other ones that are going to take off.
Fly the flag, see who salutes.
That's right.
Are you worried that CanCon, the rules haven't changed in the last 20 years?
No, because I think CanCon's better than ever. You know, I mean, where it's the bigger challenge is in the classic stations, because there are formats that you just can't do very well. I mean, it'd be difficult to launch a classic alternative station with CanCon, right? Because there's just not the library there. For the contemporary stations, I have no concerns, and I am so proud to be a Canadian, and I am so proud to champion Canadian artists. So no, I'm not really worried. That's not something that worries me. I mean, it is a bit, you know, the fact that radio is regulated as heavily as it is, and online is not, or digital is not. I mean, that is a concern. The fact that there is, you know, ownership restrictions on us, and the fact that there's a non-hit regulation in parts of Ontario, it's very difficult to sort of stomach that when you see digital services coming in with absolutely zero regulation. So I would say in the big picture, all the regulations I think are a question, but CanCon specifically is, you know, frankly, one that I'm kind of the least worried about.
What advice do you have for anybody who's listening? I'm sort of focusing here on talent who want to work at a Rogers radio station. What advice can you give them? Because I think that's why a lot of people want to listen to this podcast, is to see, I wonder what advice I can get to work at Rogers and be on air.
Oh, what an interesting question. I actually answered this question yesterday from someone who, a young talent that I was talking to. And, you know, I think it comes down to three things. So one is talent. You have to have raw talent. You know, whether you're early in your career and you have that, or whether you're well into your career and you have that, you have to have the raw talent. I didn't have raw talent at being on the air, which is why I'm not on the air for working for Rogers. So you have to have raw talent. The second thing is, you know, you've got to have the right attitude. So you've got to have the sort of the work ethic and the ability to, you know, to want to be coached, and the ability to do the work. And I think it's more work now than it ever has been. I mean, you know, the work back in the day before automation was intense in the control room. You know, you had to actually play songs and run commercials, and it was a very intense environment in a control room. The environment in the control room technically is much easier, but the intensity comes around the competition and who you're competing against, and the fact that people are choosing you over any myriad of content creators, whether they're people on YouTube or they're podcasters or they're the radio station down the street. So, you know, you've got to have the right attitude and be willing to work and work hard and be coached and recognize that all the greatest players in the world need a coach. And then the last one for me is you have to fit the culture. And this is becoming more and more important. You know, we just don't really have a tolerance for, you know, jerks, to be blunt. You know, we want to have a culture where there's a lot of discussion and debate and diversity of thought. So it's not to say, you know, we only bring in people that are going to say yes to all the things we chuck at them. But we want people that are going to be, that fit the culture of Rogers. And that's something we are very diligent about. And, you know, you've got to fit the culture of the radio station specifically, and then you've got to fit the culture of the bigger corporation. Because as we started the podcast with Culture Eats Strategy for Breakfast, this is really important to us. So, you know, for me, it's those three things.
And this is the moment where I'm out of questions. But that's okay, because Julie had a few for me. And we still had some podcast gas left in the tank.
I'm a big fan of yours. I don't hear all of them, but I listen to as many as I can. I think, you know, you've been doing this. How long have you been doing this now? It's been quite a while.
You're episode 101.
Wow. And how many episodes do you release? One a week?
One a week.
Yeah. So, you know, you were in on the you were in on this early, particularly in Canada. So what made you take the leap?
I went to the podcast movement. I saw all the raw talent that I think used to come by the radio station and say, "Can I please be on the air?" And they had entrepreneurial spirit, and it wasn't like going to a radio conference. It was different. It had that old school radio conference kind of vibe and feel. And I said, something is going on here. And I said, wait a second, if these people are all doing audio, I can stick handle around all these people. But what are they doing well that I need to learn? And so that's what this podcast is about. It's about me learning what podcast is. And, you know, I just defaulted to the one thing I know the best, and that's radio. So I said, well, I'll talk about radio. Because if I said, what else would I talk about? I don't know what else I would talk about.
Hmm. And what are your predictions for the future? Where do you see the business going?
I see a world of radio is going to be live, local, and now. One of the things I've noticed with podcasts is that I've actually learned a lot about what radio is. Live, local, and now, and being immediate and capturing the moment and then moving it forward and capturing that attention. But also a lot to what you said about radio having to band together. When one station makes great radio, that affects the six other stations that people are going to cume.
Right.
And I think when your competitor does something great, applaud them. Heck, even promote it, because, you know, it brings people to the dial. And you will get that residual spill. And people say, hey, I heard something great on the radio today. That's where it comes from. So if we all do great radio, we're going to be fine. If we all learn to do it live, local, and now. And radio's biggest asset is talent, but it's also going to be talent that is live, that can perform live.
Right.
If podcasting's great, but listen, I can go up and edit this thing over and over and over again. Until it sounds perfect, which is what I do every week. I get that. And that's the Valerie Geller school of, if you are recording it, you can always make it better, which means I can actually work on this episode forever. But at some point, you've got to stop and call in the deadline and say, okay, I'm releasing the book. And with radio, it is live. And we need strong live performers. And when you have strong live performers, it's going to be great. The other thing that's happening right now is, and this is coming out of podcasts, and that's, and you touched on it, was empathy and authenticity. And
yeah,
the radio formats that have that are the ones that are going to win. And you can see this. You can see this. The formats that are going down right now are the ones that lack that. And the ones that are doing well are the ones that have authenticity, empathy, and can create the emotional connection. Podcasting is very, very one-on-one. I mean, we talk in radio, hey, talk to like one person. But, you know, sometimes there's two people in the car, there's three people. Podcasting is very, very one-on-one. With 425,000 podcasts, very one-on-one, with earphones.
Right.
Doing something that you've set aside for by yourself for the me time. That is very, very powerful. And the other massive difference that I've learned is, you know, on the radio, I can say something bad about you or that you find offensive. Apologize and it will be okay. In a podcast, you can't do it because it sits there forever.
No take backs.
You know, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if I said something that would hurt you, you would be hurt, but it would still be there forever. So unless we threw the episode in the garbage, we have to get rid of it. So we have to be very, very careful in podcast about how we make people feel. If you and I have an uncomfortable moment, people are going to stop listening to this podcast.
Right.
People are going to, oh, this is not what I listened for. I'm putting this away. That's uncomfortable. And they're going to stop. And the other difference between radio and podcast, radio, people dive in and out. And podcast, you start with the most listeners at the beginning, and it just generally falls all the way down to the bottom.
Right.
And you've got to you've got to retain them to the end. So those are many of the differences that, I found. And if you want to make money in podcasting, just have something to sell in the middle.
Yeah.
Or if you want to make any money, if you don't have anything to sell, it's going to be a very tough slog.
That's right. That's right. Well, it's a listen, it's a great time to be in the business. I really applaud you for, you know, doing this. And I think you do a great job at it, and you've become a real leader in this space. So congrats to you.
Well, thanks. It's actually it's a lot of fun, I found out after a while. And you know, there's people, you know, there's who said you got to release an episode every week and be consistent. Okay, I'll do that.
Right.
And, you know, what if Maureen Holloway didn't show up for work tomorrow? You know, that is she there?
I'd go to her house and pick her up.
Yeah, of course. But somebody else would, you know, they'd go sample something else. So you've got to be consistent. So it's there's lots of learning about this every day. The industry's learning, and I encourage people to go to Podcast Movement just to watch what goes on and go, hey, what's happening here? You know, what's going on exactly? Yeah. What are you guys learning about and figuring out about and watching the entrepreneurs go? It's quite something. I'm always inspired, and you know, and a lot of people in the space. My first day at Podcast Movement, it's a great story, and I won't take up too much more of your time. But within the first 20 minutes, they were talking about diversity in the podcast space, and I was like, "What are you talking? I came from radio where we have an issue. You know, we have many, many issues in radio, whether it's, you know, Latino or African American, and you know, there's massive issues, but it's podcasts. There's no barrier to entry with podcast. And so when I had to stand up and explain that difference to people, and they're like, oh, okay, I see. You know, it costs, you know, a few hundred dollars and a microphone, and you can just go. And this is why the top of the two dope queens are at the top, and you know, Grammar Girl and all these people who were told no can now be told yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that is that's another thing that I think, you know, keeps me up at night is the lack of diversity. It really worries me in the business because, you know, when I look around, not in all cases, but in many cases, when I look around, you know, the people that are speaking to the audience don't look like the audience. I think that is a major issue and something that has to be corrected. And we have to speed up the correction. And, you know, I think, you know, it's important that this doesn't become about, you know, leaving people with the feeling that, you know, we're going to put people out of work to, you know, create diversity. I think it's finding the opportunities and making sure you do it and recognizing, you know, the you talk about mistakes, right? And what do you learn from mistakes? The first thing you have to do when you make a mistake to learn from it is to call it, right? I call it, that was a mistake. Here's why that didn't go well. And then maybe dissect it to death so that you can learn from it. If you don't call it and dissect it, you won't learn from it. You know, if you just pretend that it didn't happen, or if you know that it happened, but you don't want to call it out, you won't learn from it because you'll just sweep it under the rug. And diversity is the same to me, you know? If we are actually brave enough to just put our hands up and call it, like you just did, we'll fix it. But if we pretend it's not there, if we pretend that, you know, we don't have an issue, we're not going to fix it. And I think we do have an issue. And again, I think there's a way to improve diversity in a productive way, not a negative way. But it is a major issue that we have to sort out in radio.
Yeah, in the past, if I look backwards, I had a very, very easy path through radio because of what it took to get there. It took, you know, moving, you know, being mobile, moving from town to town. And you're young and female. There's some places in Canada to be alone is probably not the best. Mm. You know, I thought mobility, you know, is an issue. You know, things were very, very much stacked in my favor, you know, just the way it rolled out for me. But I don't see, you're right, and this is why I'm beginning to see different, better radio shows coming forward, because we're letting real people now on the air.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And look, heritage is a better word than old, but it's a mature business. It's a medium that's been around for a very, very, very long time. And, you know, with heritage and maturity, there are a lot of strengths, but there are also challenges that come with being around for a long time. And that is this sort of, you know, ensuring that we've got to fix what those challenges are. You know, we've got to bring diversity of thought to the business. We have to not be scared of, you know, somebody coming in with, you know, with a new point of view or with a different way of delivering content. Or, you know, we can't be afraid of podcasting. We have to embrace it. We can't chase every little shiny thing that comes our way. But at the same time, we have to be excited about the possibilities and not terrified of it.
Yeah. And it also starts with how we recruit talent, because we're doing the same thing. Recruiting, send your tapes, send the MP3s. And I'm finding some great stuff just on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, and I brought one on actually episode 98 or something like that. I brought a young woman on who was like, loves rock and roll, loves music, much like you do. And I asked her about her radio and she had no radio, anything. Right. And, you know, if I had a way, if I had, you know, a rock station, I'd run and say, how do I get her to be a part of the brand and then parlay her into being a personality? Because she's awesome on YouTube.
Yeah.
And she's
yeah.
got all the bands. I'm like, this is how the story starts. This is how it begins.
Well, you know, when you can, you know, for many people who wanted to get into radio, I think you've touched on this, that they needed someone to allow them to do it, right? I mean, we all needed someone to say, yes, you can go on the air. You can do the shift or whatever. You know, whereas with YouTube or podcasting, you don't need anyone's permission. You just need to do it yourself. Your bullhorn is much smaller in that way. But there is no barrier to entry. I mean, you can just go ahead. My son wants to do a podcast. He just goes and does a podcast. And that's exciting. And that will, you know, that will allow, the more of that we can celebrate, it takes all the bias out, right? Because if you, you know, if you're doing the hiring and you're sort of biased against people for not having experience or for coming at things a little differently, all the bias goes away when they're doing it themselves successfully already and you're picking them up and they're getting that experience on their own and you're picking them up and putting them on your radio station.
Thanks for listening to the Sound Off Podcast. Find us online at soundoffpodcast.com and connect with us wherever great social media is housed. The show is imaged using the sounds from Core Image Studios and assembled weekly by
Evan Surminski, mixing and production.
Kendra Magnus Johnston, content marketing.
Written and hosted by Matt Kundle.
A production of the Sound Off Media Company.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, SayTheDamnScore.com.
You looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C., as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, the Fountain app, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.